football on Off the Ball.
So you can't not mix politics and sport. You have to do it, because you can't send an Israel team into the Viva Stadium and go, it'll be grand, Jack. No, it won't be.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Pegó en la mano de un hombre argentino, se está habilitando el hombre del italiano que ingresa, elude al arquero, viene el empate, ¡gol! ¡Lambrú!
This week on Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors, how a Danish wonder kid nearly ended up at Liverpool, and how the team of the 80s could have won even more. Michael Ledger's proposed move to Merseyside could have altered the European football landscape, but why did the deal ultimately collapse? Find out on this week's Sliding Doors. Subscribe now in your OTB football podcast to not miss an episode. Coming to you for free each and every Monday.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Darren O'Sullivan from 7:30 to talk about the weekend's Gaelic football action in the National Leagues. From 8 p.m. then, we've got Monday Night Rugby coming your way with the dream team of Gerry Thornley and Andy Dunn here in studio. And then from 9 o'clock, the football show featuring Kevin Kilbane beaming in from Canada, and Ben Symes on the League of Ireland weekend that was as well. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a message on WhatsApp. Stephen Doyle is on Newsround duty, as he always is on a Monday. Steve-O, how are you doing?
Great, on, thank you.
I'm very happy to say Kathleen McNamee is here as well. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
Agreed to come on the proviso that Arsenal had come away from the weekend with a win. And when you saw the fixture list and it was Wigan in the FA Cup, you were like, okay, I think I can bank on this.
I know. And then the first thing Steve-O says to me about coming on is about talking about the Brentford game. And I'm like, no, I can't think about Brentford for at least another 2 weeks.
That's all over. I mean, you're referring to tonight's Brentford game.
I know, but I just don't want to think that they even exist at the moment.
I know. It's a sore point, but time will tell if it's going to be significant as the season goes by. We're going to be talking a lot about Ireland versus Italy as the week goes on, I suspect. And it was it probably should have been a victory for Italy on Saturday afternoon at the Aviva Stadium. I don't think there's any getting away from it. I currently have the sense of scepticism about whether or not it was actually a forward pass for that Lewis Lina try, but I think Gerry and Andy are going to disagree with me vehemently on that later on. Nevertheless, at halftime on Saturday, I was kind of in a very negative place as a person watching this Ireland rugby team. I was like really hoping for the pundits on Virgin Media to like really stick the boot in. I was hoping for like national scandal. This is a national scandal, everybody. The fact that we're getting beaten by Italy at this stage of the game. And then it was kind of weird. At full time, I was like not angry at all. And then as the days have gone by, I've actually engaged in a sense of complete toxic positivity at this point. Like, I think Ireland might actually be okay. Like, when I picture Saturday, all I'm seeing is Robert Balakoon burning Italian defenders. All I'm seeing is Cormac Izichukwu lording it at the scrum, or lording it at the line-out. And I'm kind of envisaging that last scrum where Edwin Adogbo kind of keeps everything together and shows his heft in there. And I'm like, God, maybe this scrum is going to be fixed by Adogbo's arrival on the scene with Ireland. Like, I've gone from a place of, this could have been one of the most ignominious defeats in the modern history of Irish rugby, to thinking, God, is the future of Irish rugby actually going to be okay?
There's a certain cohort of Irish sports fan throwing shoes at their radio right now after that. I don't know. I went into that game not expecting all that much. I was talking to my dad the day before and I was like, do you know what? If Italy beat us tomorrow, I actually don't think I'm going to be all that mad about it.
Because Italy are good?
Because I think they're on a different trajectory than we are at the moment. You know, they're going into it with a better feeling than we probably were after the opening game. There's question marks over what the trajectory of Irish rugby is at the moment. And I know the names that you mentioned there is a lot of hope that they will become the big leaders in that team. But it would have, I don't think it would have been totally outside the realms of possibility for this tournament, for that game to have gone Italy's way.
They should have won the game.
Yeah, they should have won the game. And I don't know if people would have been that mad about it either. I think the anger comes more from losing to the French or the English, because we see ourselves as being like, that's the level that we should
be aspiring to.
Yeah. Whereas that game, I think it's easier to talk about it in the context of those younger players, new people coming in, maybe the leadership not being quite there just yet, and the Italians having a great time at the moment with where rugby is in their country and what they are actually developing there.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And it's a very futile exercise to base form on Team X beating Y, and then you beat Team X, therefore you're better than Team Y. But certainly...
Well, the Scottish proved that after.
precisely, and Scotland have often bucked that sort of logic completely when it comes to their relationship with England, and that was just extraordinary. Is the Scotland thing such a freak feature of their relationship with England and modern rugby that we can't count anything when it comes to Saturday and Ireland's capabilities of actually beating this England team?
Well, were the English team not overrated because of the manner in which they beat Wales, and that the Scotland performance maybe was a better gauge of where they are? Like, Wales are just... You kind of worry about the future of the game in Wales.
Like, I worry about the present.
It's the present. Well, see, you're actually hitting a really good point there, Owen, because I just wonder, and especially with Irish rugby fans, is there's too much of an obsession with the future, you know, planning for the World Cup, this, that and the other. And you're kind of thinking, like even Andy Farrell and the whole Sam Prendergast, Jack Crowley thing, where it's like, it just seems to be there's this obsession with planning for the World Cup. And then every time Ireland get to a World Cup, there's the traditional, you know, disappointment of not progressing past the or to the knockout stage of the tournament ever in their history. And I was kind of thinking, like, should you as a head coach or a manager of any team in any sport pick the best team to win the match? That is your job.
I feel like that's been truer in previous years, though, than it is at the moment. I think when we had the supposed golden generation, the focus was very, very certain on the World Cup. Whereas I do feel like there's been less of that, or at least it's growing less over recent months, because people are realizing that the squad isn't there at the moment and we need to figure that out for the next Six Nations. And the next Six Nations isn't about growing to the World Cup. It's about, can we actually make sure that we're not totally humiliated considering where we have been within world rugby?
What's the point you're making? Are you saying that he hasn't been picking what he believes to be his best teams?
Well, it just feels that Prendergast, I think a lot of people, our own Andy Dunn, was saying out of the tournament that he wanted to see Jack Crowley getting more minutes. The guy was the out half for the last time Ireland won the Six Nations.
Yeah, no, 100%. We've got a text in here from Colin Amayo who says, surely Sam Prendergast has to be dropped after that game. What's your opinion on it? Obviously, that's obviously what's going to happen this week. Jack Crowley is going to start the game and Sam Prendergast will be dropped. But we can't be rewriting the pre-tournament form either. It was entirely reasonable for Sam Prendergast to be the choice at the start of the Six Nations.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And now that choice has obviously gone wrong. I know that's...
Yeah, and I'm actually even going back to last year's Six Nations. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Where there was still that debate, even though Crowley had performed so well in the previous one. The other thing as well, the other point I picked up on Saturday was, because I watched the first half at home up until halftime, saw Peter O'Mahony and the rest of the lads on Virgin Media giving their halftime analysis. And interestingly, I had to take off in the car then over to your native county, Sligo, Kathleen, to see Bohemians playing that evening. And so I heard Andy Dunn and Aidan and Fiona on Off the Ball then giving their post-match analysis, which, it was genuinely really, really good.
It was excellent, yeah.
But the first thing I noticed, the matchup between, and I'm sure the guys on the radio, well, Andy Dunn certainly wouldn't have seen Peter O'Mahony talking at halftime, the word intent. They all used the word intent. So I thought that was really interesting. You had Peter O'Mahony, an ex-pro, and a couple of his colleagues in the studio saying there was intent this week. Mm-hmm. And if there was no intent, they would have been worried about this Irish team. And Andy Dunn said the same thing. Fiona said it as well in the post-match on Off the Ball. And I think that's something maybe Irish supporters should be happy about, because it does mean that Andy Farrell is still, you know, I think the players still trust in him and what he's doing, and that he got a reaction from what he said to the team in the, in the week building up to last weekend.
And got a reaction to who he left out of the team in James Lowe, who was brilliant on Saturday. You'd expect something similar to happen when Josh van der Vleer comes back into the Ireland team at whatever stage that is. I suspect there might also be a hard decision to be made this weekend. I don't know in what position, but the momentum around, you know, giving Ronan Kelleher a start has certainly built up over the last couple of days, certainly the way the scrum was eviscerated on Saturday. And maybe that's exactly the kick that Sheehan needs. And maybe not. Maybe Sheehan starts again and he realises that last week wasn't a great performance in the scrum and Ireland's scrum sets out pretty well against England. I don't know. Again, this is probably my toxic positivity speaking after Saturday. These are all the glass half full ways you can look at it. There is also a chance that Scotland beating England is completely meaningless when it comes to judging the form of England going into this game. And Ireland actually were as vulnerable as they looked in that second 20 minutes on Saturday, and England win comfortably.
Jeez, one whole day of no rain and you've lost the run.
I cannot believe the blue skies are back, Steve-O. I'm the happiest man on earth. I hadn't seen it for about 4 weeks, that blue sky, and it is absolutely beautiful. Barry says, of course the fixation should be on preparing for the World Cup. It's the true test in rugby. Six Nations is fine, but it's hardly the pinnacle, and random no-stakes test matches are not the same. The focus should always be on the World Cup. Now, of course, there is the Nations Cup this year, so they're not going to be random test matches anymore.
Yeah, hey, there's the RFU got a bank of income from the Six Nations, though, as well. It's their bread and butter.
And finally, before we get to your first story, Steve O'Dillon on YouTube says, there's more of an atmosphere at a funeral than at the Aviva for a rugby international. That's disrespectful to some funerals. Attempts to force an atmosphere towards the end, playing music over the speakers, was pathetic. I think, to be fair, for an Italy home game, Saturday might have been one of the better ones. I was only judging it from watching it on television, but it sounded pretty buzzing in that second half because the game was up for grabs. I think maybe the first 20 minutes, a lot of people thought it'd be a, kind of a day in the armchair, figuratively speaking, for a lot of the Ireland players, and just was, it was never going to be the case against this Italy team. So the crowd got going in the second half when Ireland really needed to go out there and actually wrestle the game from Italy. You're going to start, though, with Brentford, who are, of course, in FA Cup action this evening, Steve-O.
Yeah, and the draw, of course, on the fifth round draw was made before kick-off tonight in that FA Cup tie. So I'll give you, I'm going to start off with a couple of the Hollywood ties, shall we say. West Ham United will play the winners of tonight's game. That's Macclesfield or Brentford. The Hammers will have home advantage in that game. Get a load of this one. Wrexham at home to Chelsea. Oof. That should be a great tie to watch. And then Newcastle United, of course, recently humiliated in the semi-final of the League Cup over two legs by Manchester City, will play the same team in the next round of the FA Cup. So the other ties, Fulham at home to Southampton. Sunderland will go to either Port Vale or Bristol City. It's Leeds United against Norwich City. Mansfield Town playing Arsenal, and then Liverpool will go to Molineux to take on Wolves. Interestingly, Arsenal and Mansfield have met in the FA Cup once before, way back in 1929. The Gunners won by 2-0. So a good form guide there for Gunners fans going into that tie against Mansfield. Moving on to the tie tonight, Keith Andrews hoping his side aren't added to the long list of big FA Cup shocks. The side they meet this evening gave us one of the biggest by knocking out last year's winners in the previous round. Macclesfield knocking out Crystal Palace with a superb home performance last month. The Silkmen are at home again tonight.
Silkmen.
Yep, I'll give you the explanation later on. Andrews insists they won't be taking any chances against the non-league side just days after they drew with the Premier League leaders, Arsenal.
We're going to go from facing the team that's top of the Premier League to a team that's obviously in the sixth tier of English football. So it is huge. There's no point in saying it's the same, because it's not. It's completely different. But our preparation will be the same. I think what plays a part in it is the education of what it will be like, because it's impossible for some of our players to realise what it will be like. So it's up to us to inform them what the environment will be like, what the pitch will be like, what you're going to come up against, the fact that it's a huge, huge game for them in their history, like Crystal Palace was. And we certainly won't be underestimating them, we really won't.
So don't be fooled into thinking the Silkmen comes from the old 50s and 60s Macclesfield in their baggy shorts, you know, dazzling people with their silky skills. No, Macclesfield was once known as the Silk Town from the 18th to the early 20th century, a major centre of silk production in England. At its peak, the town had dozens of silk mills and became internationally known for high-quality silk weaving. We'll be hoping to weave some silky skills this evening from 7:30 against Keith Andrews Brentford.
Okay, amazing backstory there. What have you got next for us?
Yeah, the FAI are looking at a lunchtime kickoff for that October 4th Nations League match against Israel, according to the Irish Daily Star today. On the FAI and Gardaí met over the weekend, with Mark McCadden reporting that both parties have moved closer to a decision on the staging of the game. One of those, as part of the strategy to counter security concerns, would see the match kickoff at 1 o'clock rather than the usually scheduled 7:45 time confirmed by UEFA when the fixtures were announced last Friday. The sides are due to meet twice in the campaign. There are doubts, of course, over the away leg, with Budapest touted as a possible neutral venue. The Israeli FA have until 120 days before the fixture, which is a June 7th deadline, to submit their venue of choice. Belgium, of course, played a home Nations League game against Israel in Debrecen, while Budapest was the stage for their away match.
Okay, so that's on the FAI side of things. It'll be interesting to see what actually happens on the other side. So has it been officially ruled out that Israel is going to play host? Or because I'm presuming they're submitting their venue of choice, they will be picking somewhere in Israel right now.
Yeah.
Hoping for UEFA to bend to that. I guess
exactly.
They're waiting for a UEFA.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah, they're waiting for it. So Israel will propose the venue and then it'll have to get the go-ahead from UEFA.
Okay, we've had some disappointing news today from a player who was hoping to get back into the Republic of Ireland setup.
Yeah, head coach at League One side Blackpool, Ian Evatt, has confirmed that Michael Obafemi is out for the season after undergoing ankle surgery. Obafemi had made just 5 appearances on loan from Burnley, but was injured on Saturday as Blackpool lost to Plymouth Argyle. The last of his 12 senior Ireland caps came in June 2024, and he was hoping to stake a claim for a place in Hamer Hallgrimsson's squad ahead of that playoff semi-final against Czechia.
Okay, we've got big transfer news involving a League of Ireland departure.
Yeah, player who has been touted for a move for a long time now finally has got that move. Dundalk have come to an agreement with Norwich City for the highly rated 17-year-old Vinnie Leonard. Leonard turns 18 in March, so he'll join the English Championship club in the summer transfer window. The Canaries will fork out an undisclosed 6-figure fee, with the announcement coming just 4 days after Brighton were reported to have agreed to sign him for €400,000. It's thought Celtic and Crystal Palace were also keen on the player, who impressed for Ireland at last year's Under-17 World Cup.
Now then, let's move on to the sort of grim story around Edwin Adogbo.
Yeah, the RFU has opened an investigation into online racist abuse directed toward Adogbo. The Munster lock from Cove in County Cork made his Ireland international debut in Saturday's Six Nations win against Italy. A number of racist comments were posted below the RFU's post, which celebrated Adogbo's first Ireland cap. The RFU are now working with data technology firm Signify, which specialises in protecting against online abuse, as well as the relevant authorities. Before the RFU had put up those Adogbo posts, head coach Andy Farrell had also hit out at what he described as keyboard warriors for the abuse aimed at Sam Prendergast and Jack Crowley. He called both out half strong characters, but he feels online abuse can be damaging for young players. So obviously that was in the embargoed section of the post-match press conference, so it wouldn't have been Farrell wouldn't have been aware of what was going on online in relation to Adogbo. Now, before his debut on Saturday, Owen, off the balls, Rachel Sheehan went down to his old club, Cove Pirates. And I think this gives us a sense about what people who really matter think about Adogbo and his representation of their hometown. Here's the Pirates president, Nicola Power, and firstly club PRO, Richie McGrath.
The well wishes that we're getting from the other local clubs, I won't name any in case I leave somebody out, but it's been fantastic. I mean, not a Cove native of myself, but having to go back to the time where Sonia Sullivan was still competing, and it's akin to that kind of atmosphere across the whole island.
There's a right buzz around the place, so Nicola.
Oh, there is, yeah, absolutely. Like, even I suppose I have kids that are in the secondary school, and I'm teaching over in Carrigaline, and they know my affiliation to Cove Pirates. We always have the bit of banter in class, you know. But when they saw Edwin getting onto the squad, they even had said to me, "Nice one, miss," you know. So look, it's spreading across the harbour to Carrigaline as much as it is around the town here. But yeah, we're just extremely proud, and as Richie said, like, you cannot reiterate how important it is for a junior club to have someone of Edwin's stature being chosen for the squad, you know, and coming through the way that he has.
Yeah, that full piece is available for free to watch or to listen to right now. It's absolutely brilliant work from Rachel. So that's the piece on Cove Pirates. And I don't know, this is like absolutely appalling that the debut of Edwin Adogbo and the celebration of that online has been kind of taken down this path. But at the same time, anybody who has had the misfortune of accidentally logging onto X recently won't be surprised that it's been brought down this path whatsoever and weaponized by a bunch of racists, really, this conversation. It's horrendous. So hopefully we can all just kind of celebrate Edwin Odogbo over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we see a bit more of him in an Ireland shirt. As I mentioned at the top, I mean, that first scrum is a little bit hopeful. The kind of the one concern is you just hope his body holds up now over the next couple of years, because this is a player that could make a real difference for this Ireland team, not just over the next 18 months, but well into the future as well. So an amazing reception for him coming on the pitch as well on Saturday. Again, another piece of atmosphere that you could tell that was very evident coming through the television. So I think the vast, vast majority of people are fully in support of this, of him, and rightly so. And it's just a shame that kind of an awful minority has become the story today. Kind of on a lesser extent, I don't want to like compare one bad story with another bad story here, or try and kind of say that compare their various levels. But the Crowley and Prendergast thing is quite interesting, because, as you mentioned, they're from embargo quotes. So Andy Farrell is referring to feedback and criticism online of these players before the Italy game. So this has nothing to do with Sam Prendergast's performance against Italy. It's in the build-up to it. And to be honest with you, I hadn't really noticed much. So I wonder what they're seeing. I wonder what's getting to the lads. I wonder what's actually breaking through and that they're actually seeing, because it's obviously important enough for Andy Farrell to bring this up relatively unprompted, from what I understand, on Saturday evening. We do then have an update from the Ireland camp, Steve-O.
Yeah, the Six Nations preparations underway today for that match against England at Twickenham on Saturday. The RFU reported no fresh injury concerns ahead of the match, so it would seem Gary Ringrose, who suffered a knee problem against Italy, will be okay for the game. Farrell is hoping, of course, that they've learned some of the lessons from that loss away to France as they build up to that game. We're going to hear more from the Irish camp over the next couple of days anyway.
And then we have a member of Team Ireland in action at the Winter Olympics today.
Yep. There was absolute carnage, actually, in the first run of the slalom at the Winter Olympics. Just 51 of the 90 skiers completing the course in the first run. Cormac Comerford came after his second run, two runs, ended up in 31st place of the slalom at the Winter Olympics in Italy. The Dubliner recording a time of 2 minutes, 10.24 seconds. The winner with the gold medal from Switzerland is Loic Millard, and he finished in a time of 1 minute, 53.61 seconds. But a very respectable finish there for Cormac Comerford.
Another unbelievably dramatic weekend at the Games. There's obviously been the curling controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Did his finger touch the rock or not? There has been the
Canadian women being drawn into it now as well.
What's happened there?
So they were also accused of touching the rock.
Oh, I saw that story. I thought that was the same story.
No. Oh. So the men and the women have both been accused
of it,
the two teams. And apparently the Canadians have a history of this.
Wow.
And that's part of the reason why the Swedish men set it up a certain camera angle so that they could try and capture their own footage of the guy touching the rock as it went. I also read a great story in The Guardian over the weekend about the fact that all the curling rocks are made from a specific island in Scotland, where there's a very specific type of rock that they use, and then there's people there that are trained to make all the curling rocks.
So Team GB has a massive advantage when it comes to curling. And has there been the same level of on-court beef? What do we call it? What is it? Lane? Court? A curling?
So it was different for the women's one because it was actually the adjudicators or the officials that spotted it rather than the other team. So the Canadians were very hyped up about it, obviously, and they were going to each of the different officials saying this didn't happen. She definitely didn't touch it. Having watched the replays and obviously now being a keen curling fan, as everyone is over the last couple of weeks, that one doesn't look as obvious as the other one when you compare it. Like the men's one, I feel like you can see him hit it a little bit more than you can on the women's side.
The curling sheet.
The curling sheet. So
curling sheet.
Some on-sheet histrionics from the opponents of Team Canada in both instances. How was the trip to Sligo?
Liquid football. Absolutely tremendous stuff from Bohemians.
It's the best county in the world, Steve. <There you go. laughs>
But atmosphere, absolutely fantastic. I felt sorry for Sligo Rovers supporters because they really were poor on the night. It was a good strong wind. I drove through sleet and snow and all sorts of conditions over to the showgrounds, but it was well worth it for a great Bows display, and especially for Colin Whelan, who has struggled to, I suppose, nail down that striking position in the team. but he scored now his third hat-trick in the space of about a year to help them win that game 4-0. And Dawson Devoy, listen folks, anybody gets a chance to see him playing live this season, go see him because he's absolutely tremendous. And I actually managed to squeeze in the Carlisle grounds on Friday night. I was at a loose end, went to see Bray draw with Longford Town 1-1. There's over 1,200 people at it on a Friday night, so it was good weekend. Young Billy O'Neill, young talent playing for Bray Wanderers, just 17, and Richard Ferrazoy as well, teaming up for the goal there. Another two players, people get a chance to go watch them, certainly do.
What's the showgrounds like as an away experience?
Oh, it's one of my favourites, yeah. Absolutely. I love just the walk up the road there to the showgrounds, and you can kind of see the spot, the floodlights to the houses, and it's just, you always get a great welcome there, really. Good people out in Sligo.
Oh, they're all right. Ben Bulbin in the background as well is always nice.
Yeah, when it's during the summertime, you get to see that behind the showgrounds, is great.
And the fact that it is just a dander into town before or afterwards kind of always puts a nice atmosphere around the place whenever there is a game on.
Well, hopefully you'll get back to work in the commentary booth this weekend for us, Steve-O. You've got off lightly to start the season. We need one. Hopefully not three in a row.
I'm up to Derry on Friday, so we'll... at least the pitch won't let us down.
We've got that one penciled in for now anyway, for Friday night here on Off The Ball. Stephen Doyle, Kathleen McNamee, thank you very much for popping in for tonight's news round.
Football on Off The Ball. So you can't not mix politics and sport. You have to do it because you can't send an Israel team into the Viva Stadium and go, it'll be grand, Jack. No, it won't be.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.